Ajramakta recording an interview with Dr. Stuart Fraser on Monday, the 10th of October, 1994. On 10th of October.
We're rolling, aren't we now?
Dr. Fraser, can you give me your full name and your place of birth and your age, please?
Right. I'm Dr. Stuart Muir Findlay Fraser, born in March 1946 in the Fielding Johnson Hospital on Regent Road in Leicester. Now, to give you an explanation as to why I'm talking here about Highfields, I think my family background would help a lot. My grandfather, on my maternal side, was demobilised at the end of the First World War. He was a Scottish medical graduate, single, and had to basically find somewhere to work. He answered an advertisement in the British Medical Journal, where there was a practice of two doctors working from Highfields, a Dr. Young and a Dr. Payne, who one was a Scottish graduate and one was a London graduate, and they were looking for a new partner. I don't know the stories about it, but he eventually took up residence at 56 Melbourne Street in 1920, soon after he was demobilised. He was single. I don't know how much he paid to join the practice, as at that time you had to have some money to buy, some capital to buy into a practice. However, I know that there is a, it was well known within his family, who were all from Scotland. His father was dead by that time. He had a widowed older sister, and he was one of the younger members of the family. And he borrowed money from his older widowed sister and used that as capital to buy his way into the practice. And in fact, from that date until his sister's death, always paid her interest on the loan, which was his way of paying her back for helping him buy into the practice. He came down in 1920 as a bachelor and immediately took over residence of a very large house which had one, two, three, four, had four large first floor rooms, large downstairs rooms, three kitchen scullery, and an attached surgery waiting room and small consulting room and a dispensary, and there was an attic room of with two rooms in it. He took over residence here and in fact brought his youngest sister down to keep house for him. She was probably in her early 20s. She still lives. And she came down and kept house for him for 6 months because he was actually engaged to marry someone, and he married after he'd been in practice for 6 months, and he lived in the house from 1920 till 1930s, when his practice had expanded and built up, and he moved to the Evington area, and his assistant stayed in the house and ran the practice from the surgery premises. So from this house, certainly my mother and her younger brother were both born and lived for quite a long period of time. My mother, in fact, wasn't born in this house because, again, I'm not quite certain of what percentage, but... Again, I think... my mother and her brothers and sisters were all born in nursing homes in the city. My mother, in fact, was born in a nursing home on 7th Street in 1922. There were quite a number of small nursing homes scattered around just off the London Road there, in the, that is a part of Highfields. I don't know what it looked like. I don't know much about it. Because in fact I think it was destroyed when the stick of bombs went through Highfields and then in the Second World War. But certainly that's where my mother was born anyway. So that's mother and father, and maybe her younger sister was born here as well. But I think they all went to nursing homes to be born and then all came back to the house. So the reasons for being in Highfields is basically because my mother was born here. My mother subsequently married a doctor, and as I was brought up to believe that we came to England to make money out of the English. That is, came to from Scotland to England to make money out of the English was what I was brought up with. Highfields was basically where the practice was, where the work was, where the patients lived. Majority of the patients were panel patients on the public medical service for my grandfather, and there was a fair number of patients who were railway workers, as the area around Beale Street, Upper Kent Street, had a lot of railway workers living there, and my grandfather was a medical officer for the Railway Sick Society. My first impressions of Highfields, I suppose, really, was the fact that I lived in this rather large house. As I say, downstairs it had a large hall, a dining room and a front sitting room, a scullery and a kitchen, pantry larder. There's a small yard at the back with an outside toilet. There was a small little butler's pantry going to the dining room, and off that led the dispensary, small consulting room, and then a large waiting room. The consulting room, dispensary and waiting room were very much forbidden territories for me when I was younger. I'll go into the house here. Because that was where there were patients, and I just kept out of it. But at weekends, on the Sunday, because there were surgeries all the way through Saturdays, at weekends certainly, and on the bank holidays when the surgery wasn't occupied, I could play in the waiting room, and it had like what I would call railway benches all the way around the walls, and school benches down the middle of the room. It was quite a good playroom. I could have a competition to see how long I could not touch the floor by running around the furniture and various things, was what I remember. But the other rooms were very much sort of forbidden areas altogether. There was a door directly onto the road out of the waiting room, and the one thing I do remember there is that they had a brass voice piece there, which the idea was, and there was a tube going up to the bedside of my parents, and the patients could take out a bung and blow in this, and a whistle blew at the other end, and they could speak. It was the night call tube. I suppose the overall thing that I remember about the house, that it was big and it was cold. All the rooms would have had coal fires in, could have coal fires in. As I said, upstairs there was an upstairs sitting room, and one, two, at least three bedrooms, and a bathroom, one small bathroom and a toilet separately. And then upstairs there was an attic of two rooms, and of course there's a very big cellar which was full of coal. I think the main thing is that I remember is that the house was very cold. My mother would usually keep one coal fire in the house somewhere, but I think the main problem was actually carrying the coal around the house was a problem, and it was obviously very dirty for her. The kitchen was always warm. The kitchen was a bit sort of, well, I say primitive, but probably was much better than many people would have had, in the sense that it was a brick scullery and a plastered kitchen with a big Welsh dresser style hammered fixed onto the wall. The scullery room had a central heating. There was no central heating, of course. Had a great big sort of, my mother used to call it a bomb, that heated up the water for the house, and a large porcelain sink. And again, was very cold. And I think it's the one startling thing I would say about the house that I can always remember, that it was cold, and I had no fires at all. It was big. I mean, there were the attic rooms I could play in. And of course, the answer as to why it was so big was that when my grandparents had lived here, along with the time when they in the 1920s, of course, they had always had at least one resident maidservant. And my grandmother and grandfather always said when they first came to the area that a lot of the houses, the bigger houses in the area, had at least one maidservant resident. Some had two, and there were some further up Melbourne Road, and say some at the top of Melbourne Street, where they had two uniform, that's black and white, they were wearing black and white uniform servants, resident. And certainly I know that my grandfather's predecessors, who lived further up Melbourne Street, they had at least one resident servant, and he had a bellboy, or a boy who used to run errands for him. I remember that because his daughter told me that one of these boys had tried to strangle her mother, and the poor lady had never really recovered very much from this psychologically. The interesting thing is about the servants that my grandparents had was that my parents never had any servants at all in the house from 1947 onwards, after the war of course, but up until before the war, there were always, my grandparents had always had servants, and they used to get their maidservant by going to the Countersthorpe cottage homes for orphans. And when a girl had to leave school, she then took up residence and lived in the house, and then went, usually because she was getting married. And in fact, the last servant that my grandparents ever had in 1939-40, she married from my grandparents' house. This was, of course, in Ebbington. And in fact, kept in touch with my grandmother until she died. Right. The thing that I remembered, I suppose, apart from the house, was the area. There were shops just down on the Melbourne Road, which is now, I think, a spectacle shop, and hosiery shops. Then the houses that are now, the shops are mostly hosiery shops, corner, general store, and a spectacle shop. From what I remembered as a child, was that there were food shops, groceries, butchers, vegetable shops, and there was a shop, I think the nearest one to us was one called Mr. Tivy's, and I used to get sent there with errands to get fruit and vegetables and things for my mother. And the corner shop, I think, was Curtis's, the butcher, who again my mother used to get her regular joint from once a week. And in fact, I think he continued to deliver meat to her when she went to live up on the Scrapped-Off Lane area. Opposite, my abiding memory is of the Worthington's general store, which is now Bookkeeper's premises, and I can remember going in there to get food, and my mother having to cut the coupons up because there was still some food rationing going on. I think it'd be truthful to say that, of course, that apart from the very close area around the house, I really didn't go out a lot into the area because I was, shall we say, from a different group of people from the sort of people who were living in the area at the time. I suppose it's partly the penalty of being the doctor's son. I only really had one close or one friend nearby of my own age, and that was our neighbours, and our neighbours in fact were Polish. They were obviously displaced persons from World War II. I think he had been a colonel in the Polish army, and he was there with his family, and he had a son of my age, and I used to frequently play with him. He however had very little, if any, English, and I had no Polish. So, as I say, he had no English and I had very little Polish. But we seemed to get along quite well. But I think it, as we then tended not to see each other very much, because when I came to being five and six, I was sent to a private school along the London Road. And this then sort of alienated me very much from the children and the people that lived in the area, because I was being educated outside the area, and of course I would have had grey suit, school colours, had to have a cap and a black Mac to look all very smart. The striking thing then that I remember about Highfields was that I used to have to walk. I was delivered to school. I was dropped off. My father dropped me off. He had a Ford Popular car, so I think I was dropped off at school. But I always used to walk home. So he obviously used to drop me off before morning surgery. But I used to have to walk home then, and this would be from Albert Road, which is the Clarendon Parkway, and I would walk from the age of five. I walked back to Melbourne Street. Now, there was only one major road crossing, and that was the Evington Road, St James Road, Evington Road, into St Stephen's Road. And I was told later on that my mother had another friend who I think was the wife of a dentist or another doctor, and she had instructions to look out of her upstairs window to watch for me crossing this road. That was the nearest that I was told that I was watched out for on this journey. When I think about it now, it is quite a trek for a 5 or 6 year old child to make unaccompanied, but I did it for several years. And so my abiding thoughts are that I used to come off the London Road down St James's Road, which is all very pleasant. I then had to run the gauntlet of Medway Street School, and the problems were that if there was a school crocodile out and they saw me, I would get stuffed into the hedge. So I always had to avoid any local school crocodile because I would be duffed up. And then when I got further down across the St Peter's Road, there wouldn't be any school children around so much then, but if there was a gang of them around, I often would have to run and leg it. And I remember vividly one day being chased down the cobble streets, because of course the side streets off Melbourne Road were still all cobbled with the granite sets. The main roads were tarmac at them, but the side roads were all granite sets. And I remember vividly one day being chased by three lads, one who had warts all over his hands, and he was going to give them to me. And I was chased through the side streets off Melbourne Road, through Porter Street, into Berners Street, and I think I found my way down Wilson Street and back into Melbourne Street and home. It was always a rather difficult and tense time, and it might also explain why one day I said to a school friend from my Stonygate school that I was at, he said, "Oh, come and have tea with me," and I said, "Oh, let's walk home like I do," and in fact he lived in Blaby, so I started walking to Blaby with him and his sister. They had to get the police out there that time to get me. The thing was, once I got to the age of about 11 or 12, there's a lot of redevelopment going on in the 50s, and of course they were building up Netherhall and Thurnby Lodge areas, and my father built a house out there, and he actually moved with us up to that area, but the assistant doctor continued living in the big old house as it is still being used as a doctor's premises. The other things that I remember about living down here in the area are that there was a marvellous shopping area that I remember going down. The one thing I recollect getting there was any bikes, Mr. Bones, the bikes on the Charney down Charnwood Street, which I remember vividly as being just one mass of shops and things for sale. The other thing that I remember actually about living here, very vividly, in fact, is bonfire night. I mentioned that all the side streets off Melbourne Road were made of granite sets. And what used to happen on bonfire night was that each street would have at least one bonfire, if not two. And of course you could quite happily have a bonfire because it wouldn't damage the road because it was granite sets. And bonfire night was marvellous because you could drive down Melbourne Road and every side street would have a bonfire in the middle of it. And there would be rockets and fireworks in the streets, and it was a marvellous time. I vividly remember a rocket going a bit wrong and taking off up Hartington Road, once, because the bonfires, going to Five Ways was quite a good spot. That's the opposite the Melbourne Cinema, because of course you had five roads you could see up there, and you could see lots of bonfires. It was that was a time that I always very vividly remember, was the bonfire night. There were no other major incidents or happenings when I was a child here. Probably the biggest and most memorable event was when a bread van ran loose. This was an incident that was passed down in family tradition. Of course, a lot of delivery vans when I was much younger were all horse-drawn. Milk and bread vans were horse-drawn, but there were a lot of electrical vans as well. And the surgery is virtually opposite Matlock Street, which is quite a steep slope going up towards the Spinney Hill area. And it must have been one morning, there was an almighty crash, and my mother came out of the front door, which was onto Melbourne Street, and I came out and I rushed around the corner to see what the crash was, and I came running back and I said to my mother, "Mummy, Mummy, all the tarts are lying on the road on their backs." She wondered quite exactly what was going on until I took her around, and sure enough, it was a bread delivery van that had brakes had failed, and it had come down Matlock Street and it had gone straight into the house and smashed the window and knocked the wall down. So we had a bread van stuffed into the house. And there were tarts lying on the floor on their backs, literally. And I told my mother this was quite, I just didn't know what she was thinking of at the time. That was one memorable event I remember. But I think the main thing would be to say that because I was the doctor's son and did not go to school locally, I was therefore very much played in the house, made my own amusements up, and did my own thing really. Until I was, well, up to the age of four. I have got a brother who's 4 years younger than me and a sister who's 10 years younger. If my mother was ill or I was needed to, I used to go off and stay with my grandmother, who was now living in Evington. And of course, because I am the eldest of my generation in my family, I in fact remember all my grandparents, and in fact two great-grandparents, who were all Scottish. And really, if ever there was any problems, I went to my grandparents, or I occasionally was taken up to Scotland, and where I visited my great-grandparents. I had two great-grandmothers when I was, they died in their, one in their 90s and one when she was 103. And I remember these people quite well. And it's quite interesting from the family history point of view that if you talk to my younger sister, who is 10 years younger than me, none of these people that I talk about and know of has she heard. She's heard of them, but she's never seen them. They're not sort of real living people for her. As far as church going is concerned, again, we didn't go to a church in the Highfields area. My Scottish grandparents had looked for something as near as they could to the Scottish Presbyterian Church and found a Baptist church on the London Road, which was ministered to by a Scottish minister, and that's where the family went for their religion. Because, of course, I often say that I come from a very mixed background of a Presbyterian Scottish, Catholic Irish. Having a grandmother who was Irish Catholic and having a grandfather who was Presbyterian Scottish, which is all of you who know the Ulster Troubles will realise that is a very explosive mixture. Let's see, so that's religion.
Did you used to have a television in the house?
We never had a television until we never had television until I was 12 or 13. We did have radio, of course, and I suppose that's another little memory that I always have, that my mother used to listen to the radio a lot. When I was younger, I would probably be sitting with her reading or doing whatever, and the radio would be on. And in fact, I do remember having blackouts. This must have been in the very early 50s or the late 40s. That my mother always used to keep a stock of candles on hand, and in cases of blackout, and there were blackouts that I remember in the winter months, and then we had the fire going, the coal fire going upstairs, and we had candles to sit and read by, and of course there was no radio to listen to then. But there was one radio in the house, yes, which my mother used to listen to a fair amount. And the blackout, I vividly remember that occurring on a few occasions. I mean, the only other thing was, that's right, it's interesting, having talked about my journeys to and from school, I remember child safety again. I was playing in my bedroom and there was an electric fire with a glass front to it, which I vividly remember. Because in fact, when I was getting dressed to get in my pyjamas at night, I fell and I burnt myself on it. And I remember this glass fire because there was a large circle of my flesh stuck to it. And I think my father got the district nurse to come up and dress my anatomy where I'd burnt myself. And I vividly remembered to be careful about fires at a very early age. Yes. So let's just see here.
When you say you used to walk to school at the age of five, walk back from school, can I assume that it was a very safe area to walk through at that
time?
Well,
yes. I think the main thing was that the traffic was so much less that I could be trusted. I mean, it was safe, certainly, from the point of view I wasn't going to get any mugging. I mean, the biggest danger I had was a local schoolboy who was going to give me his warts, or he's going to have a go with his catapult at me, which would be taken as normal schoolboy rough and tumble. You know, if I met schoolboys, you'd have to just stand up for yourself and either talk your way out of it, join them, or leg it and get home. But certainly there would be no reasons for anyone to worry, and I think quite honestly that if I had gone adrift and got lost, I feel very much, I don't know whether I would have not, I think I might have not, or I might have just spoken to somebody. And of course, if I'd said who I was, I think most people said, oh, you're Dr. So-and-so's son, and they would have known where I lived and taken me home. There would have been no worry. I mean, there are still people around here who, I have a number of patients who say, I remember you when you were born, I remember you when you were before you were born, you know. In fact, they're not quite right, because I think what's happening is they're getting me muddled up with my brother and sister, who are younger than me, and they forget that I'm a little bit older than they think I am. I think in the area that I would have revealed myself, I don't know, I certainly didn't have any other school friends who came down to this area. And in fact, it was one thing I often used to have as a bit of a problem as a school child. I'd say, why can't we live where all my school friends live? Who were all obviously professional class people and upper class people and things. And I was told, this is where the people are, this is where the work is, this is where we have to live. And so I accepted that.
Right. Can I just ask you, as a doctor today, how would you feel, how would you react to a five-year-old child walking through the streets of Highfields today? And what would your reactions be and your concerns?
I must admit, a child walking back, and I can remember at dusk time, it used to be getting quite dark sometimes, I would be a little alarmed, and I might even consider whether I should talk to social services about it.
That's what I was thinking about. I can't imagine my seven-year-old son walking through
high heels. Yes, when I think about it, really. But it was an area where it was a working class area, but an upper class working area. The people who were around were skilled people, shopkeepers, did a great variety of jobs, really. It was by no means a rough area at all. If you wanted to get into rough areas, my mother always warned me never to cross the Humberston Road and get into the Wall Street area. That was bandit territory. That was bad news down there, because that was a rough area. And certainly there was never any suggestion or need to worry at all of actually living in the area, really.
So were there many crimes being committed then?
Again, I suppose the honest thing to say is I can't recollect there being major crime as a problem, no. I mean, this is as a schoolboy, a young schoolboy, and I suppose I wasn't so well read with the Mercury and knew every little thing that was going on. But, I mean, my mother and father had a very laxed way of managing the house. I mean, they wouldn't ever lock things up at all. They were very trusting, and I assume that this trusting attitude was because this is how they developed through the 30s and the 40s, probably. Living in Highfields, they had no great major worry about security. There was certainly, in the time that I lived here, there was never any break-in into the house at all. Whilst we lived here, no break-ins into the dispensary or anything at all. Nothing at all, no.
Can you remember the local bobbies doing the beat?
I can never recollect actually ever seeing a local policeman walking around. I say my only contact was with the police is when I tried to walk off to Blaby from Stonygate when I was about 7. And they picked me up in a Black Mariah then and brought me home. And I remember vividly standing at the landing upstairs in the house here, and this, I think he was a sergeant, saying to me, "And you won't do that again then."